Hello everybody and welcome back inside the Shark Tank for another edition of your Surf Shark podcast. My name is Lewis and I'm joined as always by my co-hosts Alex and James, and we are coming to you off the back of a pretty disappointing day in the south of France yesterday, where Sale went down 45 points to 19 to Toulouse. So Alex, first of all, good morning. What did you make of the game yesterday?
Morning, and very nice to be speaking to you. Yeah, I think it was almost as expected, wasn't it? You know, we had a really, really good start to the game, obviously with a fantastic try from Bevan Rod. We competed with them really well, I thought, in the first half. You know, we really defended well, showed a lot of our qualities, and actually could have scored a lot more points, but there's a bit of a lack of execution, especially in their 22, that really, really cost us over the whole game, to be honest, but particularly in the first half, where it would have probably kept us even. And Toulouse showed some moments of outstanding quality that we simply, you know, I wouldn't say had no answer to, because I don't think any team in the world would have an answer to it, but it's exactly what you expect from them. And you know, they had real pace, real sort of ability to execute, keep the ball alive, find the edge of our defence and score tries. And I think, you know, it's hard to be... I think I was disappointed with their first try because it was straight through the middle of us. And it was almost a bit of a, you know, we got quite excited because we'd scored the first try and we were, you know, 7 points up. But with every other try, it sort of felt like, wow, that's an incredible try from Toulouse. And you know, someone's done something amazing, and there's not a lot you can do to defend against that. So I think overall, I think it was a decent performance, but a disappointing result. I think the scoreline was really harsh on us, given how well I thought we played generally. But it's just proof that at this level in Europe, you've got to be absolutely on your game in every area of the field. And we were just off it in a few areas. The lineout wasn't great. There was, you know, as I say, there wasn't a great execution in the 22 compared to what we've seen this season. And I think in the end, that probably made the scoreline look worse than it was. But nevertheless, I think Toulouse are just an incredible team. And you sort of hold your hands up and go, okay, wow. Well, that was a bit of a joy to watch you play rugby like that. If I wasn't a Sale fan, I would have loved that. I'm a Sale fan, so I haven't enjoyed it massively. But yeah, I think what it does do is it sets up quite an interesting encounter at our stadium at home, because I do think that game will be closer. And I think we've shown enough that we can compete with Toulouse, and therefore at home maybe we can beat them. But yeah, so it's a bit of a weird one. It's sort of very disappointing, but then I'm also quite reflective about it and thinking, well, it's just a really good rugby side we've been beaten by, and it's hard to be upset about that or annoyed, because as we said going into this game, a team absolutely stacked full of talent. So you always knew that was going to be the case.
I do wonder whether or not, as we talk about this game, we start to more towards talking about the competition as a whole, because like you said, Alex, you look at the scoreline and you're like, okay, it probably is a little bit generous to Toulouse. I think we actually did make a good account of ourselves. But the worrying thing is, you know, this was a, you know, near enough Sale first team. Obviously, we're missing a few key players. But this was kind of a rotated Toulouse side, and they kind of won it at a bit of a canter. And, you know, you can point to the fact that we had, what, 3 yellow cards over the course of the game, and that's a result of the pressure that was built up by just a playing against a better team that's forcing you into those mistakes from a discipline perspective. And, you know, it's like, I completely agree. It feels like a decent performance from Sale, a pretty poor result, but also one that was to be expected. So, James, I'm interested to get your thoughts on it, because, yeah, where do you stand on this idea that Sale still managed to put together a decent performance even when they're getting beaten by 26 points?
I think when they report back, maybe today, it's a quick turnaround, as we'll discuss, to Newcastle, I think they'll be disappointed. And the reason why we're disappointed is for a Sale team to concede 50 points is unacceptable. And that's what that's how the players and the coaches will look at it, I think, which is a good thing. Yeah. How do I think about it? I wasn't expecting anything from the Toulouse visit. You know, the points conceded is kind of neither here nor there. What I was a bit disappointed with at the end is that, you know, I did think we had enough opportunities to come away with a try bonus point across the whole game. I think that was probably in the back of the mind of the coaching staff. Let's just go out there, play. If we can score over 20 points, there's a chance that you can win the game. But at the very least, then you can come away with a try bonus point. I think that's what was in the back of mind. So I think the only thing that's gnawing at me was that it was incredibly physical. And we did turn up physically and sort of came out second, very clear second best. And not clear second best, second best. I agree with Alex. The scoreline was unfair on Sale. But I still think, you know, that will do damage mentally more than fans are expecting. You know, the on Twitter is still quite positive, etc., etc. But as a professional rugby player, to travel to the south of France, to physically turn up and come back, I'm conceded 50 points and no try bonus point, no losing bonus point. And then, you know, they're going to be battered and bruised today and they're going to have to get on a training paddock again tomorrow, and it's captain's run on Friday. Sorry, Thursday. Captain's run on Thursday. So I think it's going to be a really tough week for the lads. But I think that they can hold their heads up high. They've gone toe-to-toe. It's very different doing that with in front of your own crowd in France where, you know, I think the referee maybe got one or two things, didn't go our way. I was quite critical on Twitter and was quite rightly sort of pulled up for being, you know, just maybe a bit overly critical to a referee, which I think is fair because I think there's been a lot of crap about referees recently. We have to be very careful in our game. It doesn't run without refs. But I still think it was a bit unfair. I also think the TMO probably wasn't given the angles. The TMO probably should be given the angles thanks to the French TV directors. I thought Bevan Rod was incredibly lucky at scrum time, for example, to be consistently pinged. I did think he would struggle in the scrum. I thought he did extremely well and just was getting absolutely pinged every single time. I was like, there's nothing more that he can do to try and stay straight, honestly. Like, you know, there's only so much that you can do as a loose head. You know, you're always going to follow in the tight head. That's the thing there. And I get that if you've got an attack, if your loose head is just randomly attacking, sometimes your hips can go out and you can come in. His hips weren't coming out at all. Equally, I think he was trying his best to try and keep the scrum up as well. So, well, I've not really answered your question. I think players will be very, very disappointed and battered and bruised. I think I'm a bit disappointed we didn't come away with anything at all, because I think that when you put out a first choice side and you've got a quick turnaround, that's the bet you're making, and we've come up short. But then also I'm thinking as a competition as a whole, I think we've got an outside chance when Toulouse come to us to do one over on them, especially because Toulouse might think it'll be a walkover. Well, it won't be at ours with, you know, a proper TMO and hopefully a full sold out AJ Bell.
I do really like to be, I'll be completely honest with all our listeners here. Like, I'm not too interested in discussing this game. It kind of is what it is. You know, Sale get thumped on the day by a much better Toulouse team, and I'm more interested in talking about the dynamics of the competition and what that actually means. But there is a level of kind of analysis that we do need to do here when we're looking at the results of the match. So I guess, Alex, from your perspective, what stood out to you from that game as to the reason why Toulouse were the better team on the day, or why Sale lost, you know, by such a handy margin?
I think our defensive sort of system struggled to contain. Toulouse were clearly ready to play sort of ball in hand, you know, keep the ball alive and happy to go backwards in the knowledge that they could retain the ball. And what that did is that just created exposure in our defence that they were ultimately able to find the edge on the wing with loads of space and you know, use what amazing pace they've got to sort of run through us. So I think that was part of it. And there's not a lot you can do to combat that. You know, if they're going to keep the ball alive, I think one area we could have been a bit better was the breakdown. And again, I think part of that comes to the refereeing of it, which I thought was pretty harsh on us slash slightly in favour of Toulouse. And you know, when you push them backwards, you expect to kind of dominate them at the breakdown. And a lot of the time, they were able to go backwards, secure their own ball at the breakdown and go again. And that sort of allowed them to keep that ball alive, as I say. Whereas when we went, we you know had quite a few breakdown turnovers where they rooked over us. A lot of jackling from them that we didn't really quite... We had a good jackling threat, but I just think we isolated ourselves quite a lot. And it's something we do in Europe. Because we're so used to being physically dominant in the Premiership, we send runners out on their own with the expectation that they'll stay on their feet long enough for the support to arrive. And Acker, it happened to Acker two or three times in this game, but I remember it happening against La Rochelle when we played them in the quarters 2 years ago or whatever it was. And you know, he goes on his own, and in the Premiership, he'll bounce two people off, stay on his feet, and then support will arrive. So we'll keep the ball. In Europe, against good teams like Toulouse, he goes down at the first man, and then they've got two people over jackling him, and our support isn't there to arrive. So I think that kind of... I don't think we got physically dominated, but I think we didn't have the level of dominance that we expected to and that we used to in the Premiership, and that meant we exposed ourselves at the breakdown quite a lot, which disrupted our rhythm. And then I think the final point was just pretty basic errors at crucial times that really sort of disrupted our momentum. So a lot of not straight line outs. I couldn't tell whether they were or were not straight, but we got called for not straight line outs more than I can remember as of getting called this season. You know, disrupted line outs, missing kicks to touch, happened a couple of times. You know, I think that inability to kind of retain ball was really tough because, you know, we didn't get that many penalties. You know, the 50-50 calls generally were either 50-50 or a little bit to lose because they were at home. And therefore, when you get a penalty, you need to do something with it. And what we were doing was kicking to touch and gambling 7 points and then not being able to throw in at the line out. And it sort of meant that we didn't really, well, we didn't score in the second half until right at the end, did we? So I don't think that helped our cause at all. You know, even when I was watching, so I watched it back, and when we were, I think we were 19-7 down, and we got a penalty in front of the post and kicked to touch, and it's just that sort of mental. I think James is right that we should be disappointed not to come away with a try bonus point, because we were clearly going for one. We only went there with the intention of scoring 4 tries. Otherwise, why are we turning down a kick at the post 19-7 down? That would have been a sensible one to knock over and go back. So, yeah, I think there's a few areas there. And I do think that there's not a lot that can be done to fix the defence. You can fix the line out quite easily and fix those little mistakes. But that defensive issue and the breakdown issue even, there's not a lot. They're just fundamentally really, really good at it and better than us, and I'm not sure there's a huge amount we can do to combat that, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good point. You see it when you start to have a look at the stats, things like missed tackles. Toulouse missed 9 on the day, we missed 24. We actually won a lot more turnovers. But when you don't have the ball as frequently and you're having to play off scraps, it's very difficult to get a lot of momentum. So things like carries, you know, 96-92 on the day, according to the official stats from EPC Rugby. But the meters gained by Toulouse is 463 to 305 for Sale, you know, and you've got 7 tries to 3 and, you know, 7 clean breaks to 0. And I guess this is the thing that I kind of want to start pivoting the conversation to, which is about the level of talent available in both squads, which does bear out when you look at the statistics. You know, it's a relatively even game. Toulouse just did a lot more with the ball when they had it because they have the better players. And I guess, James, you know, it's a really good point Alex made about going down there and trying to get a losing bonus point getting a try bonus point in a losing effort. And obviously, you've made that point as well. I guess what I want to ask next is, this was, again, one of the stronger teams in the English Premiership this year with a relatively full-strength squad. I know there's a few players sort of missing here or there, against the Toulouse team that, again, was probably resting a few players, rotating a few players in a way that we didn't. And the result is such a emphatic win for Toulouse. So I guess what I'm trying to get at, and where I want to take this conversation, is are Sale and all English teams doomed to fail in this competition when they go up against the Toulouses and the La Rochelles of the tournament? Because it's all well and good putting 39 points on Ulster over the weekend, but when you have to go to Toulouse, or if you have to go to the Aviva, you know, like Gloucester did and got beat 57-0, do you think there is a significant power imbalance in this competition at the moment that results like Sunday's kind of speaks to?
Overall, yes, because, you know, I think there's teams like La Rochelle and Toulouse. I mean, Montpellier lost at the weekend. Montpellier lost at home to the Ospreys. So it shows it can be done, right? I think overall, clearly their squads are deeper. So when it comes to making decisions about individual games, they're able to make those decisions. When you have a Gloucester who have clearly prioritised the Premiership, right, and they've gone away and they got battered by Leinster. Now let's see who's made the right decision here. Yes, they had a lot of criticism bringing the competition to disrepute. Well, we talked last week about how the competition organisers are easily doing that for themselves. You know, if Gloucester win their next Premiership game, the Gloucester fans aren't going to be worried about that result. And there'll be some youngsters who have had some experience away from home. Now, that's what Sale used to do. When we used to have a very, very, very thin squad, we'd scrap through to sixth, qualify for the Champions Cup. Oh, away at Toulon? Well, we'll send out, you know, the youngsters there. We'll focus on winning our home games. You never know, we might scrape through. And then we'll prioritise the Premiership, right? Because usually we're in a relegation battle if we've qualified for the Champions Cup. Now, Gloucester have made that decision. We're going all out to try and qualify for the top four, so we've got a chance of winning the Premiership. We've just sent down a first-choice side to Toulouse. We have to travel on a plane. And now I'm going to travel back on that plane, and they've got a five-day turnaround against Newcastle. Now, if we lose that game against Newcastle, it's going to look like the coaches have made the wrong decision. But they haven't, because they want to be competitive and they want to, the players want to play. You know, the people, the Dupriers, the Van der Mervers, they're not pissing about in Manchester. They want to play in the Champions Cup. So they've got picked and we haven't pulled it off. So I don't know. I think that there was a decision there to make by the coaches. We could have sent down a more junior side where they have lost by more, maybe a little bit, probably not a lot more. Not many professional rugby players play in a team which concede more than 50 points.
But I guess that's the problem, though, is, you know, I've just put that question to you. Is there an imbalance? And your response was, yeah, but you've got to make a choice about it. And, like, it really feels like at the moment, if the Champions Cup is fit for purpose, teams like Gloucester and Sale, they shouldn't have to make a decision. They should be able to compete at a fair level across both levels, across both competitions. That's kind of where I'm about. Because I went into this Toulouse game, like, oh, we'll get battered. And, like, what does that speak to the top level of European competition if I know that my team is going to get battered because Toulouse can spend twice as much money on their squad? I agree with your point. You have to be sensible. That's the lay of the land. But I guess that's the thing, which is, you know, when you went into this game on Sunday, were you bothered about the result? Because I'm finding it difficult to care about it because I knew the outcome already.
I'm bothered because I've got my eye on what's coming next on Friday, so I am bothered. But I think you make a good point, but it's not just, you know, I of course there's a big salary cap issue, but I I refuse to go to the place where that's solved, which is increasing the salary cap for English clubs, because it goes against all of our other conversations, which is like the English game's really in the shit. So I'm afraid that if this competition is going to exist, then either, you know, the administrators have to sit down and start not doing things like having a team going away on a Sunday afternoon to the south of France and then having to go away again in the Premiership 5 days later, which isn't a local derby, by the way, administrators. And, you know, that's the only way to solve this particular issue with the short turnaround. Deep squads are just going to be there. That's just commercial reality now. There's literally no point complaining about it. If it matters so much to us, then the Champions Cup should be scrapped, because French clubs shouldn't be competing in it because it's just too much of an unfair advantage. But we've seen Exeter and Saracens win in recent years in this competition. Okay, that was before the big salary cap changes in English rugby. But it shows that we can compete. And by the way, Toulouse haven't lost at home since the Ice Age. And, you know, French 14 clubs regularly rotate their teams to send away from home as well and go to Toulouse and get an absolute hiding too. So it isn't just poor old Sale.
Where do you stand on this conversation then, Alex? Because I think there is a lot of different ways of looking at it, but I just find it very difficult. I know I personally find it quite difficult to analyse a game like Sunday's because of just how significant that disparity in talent is, because of the financial realities of the game in France and England at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's been highlighted. James is right that, you know, we're very used to French teams sending over weakened teams to us and getting battered. And you know, the French don't travel well is famous line in Sale European football. So I think it's being sort of magnified by this result, because fundamentally I enjoy watching us play against Antoine Dupont and Romain Ntamack. And I don't think that element of the competition has lost its appeal. I think that, you know, what Gloucester have done, I agree with James, is absolutely right. They've had the same outcome as us. Yet their players are going to be far better rested for next week and ours are going to be knackered. So it's a very, very good decision from them to deprioritise that Champions Cup game. I do think that it's really, really hard for English teams to compete in this competition with the way the game is structured in England. And that isn't to say that the answer is, okay, let's work out how to make English teams more competitive. The way to make English teams more competitive is to make the game in England more robust. And you look at the game in France, and they are rightly having massive success in this competition because they've got an incredibly strong domestic league. And they've got two leagues below that, which are incredibly strong as well. So, you know, they've got teams who are historically European giants in the lower tier, you know, like Perpignan and teams like that. Biarritz are in Pro D2. So if they've got that kind of depth in their domestic league, we haven't got that in the Championship. Coldy are in the Championship, which is absolutely amazing for them. But there's no one in the Championship that's ever been involved in a European competition, as far as I can remember. Unless, I mean, Leeds Tykes win that one, so maybe that counts. But England haven't got the depth domestically, and therefore they haven't got the right to win this competition, to be honest. An English club winning this would be a flash in the pan, which is exactly what it was with Exeter, because when they won it, it was the COVID year and they were having their purple patch. They won it in front of no fans. You know, there's probably a bit of an element there, but, you know, that was a very, very impressive isolated win. But you look at how much they had to put into that and where they are now. Saracens won it by breaking the English salary cap every time they did it. So, you know, yes, they fully deserve to win it, and they're not breaking the European salary cap, but when you look at English teams in this competition, they shouldn't win it. That's not to say we shouldn't be competitive at the group stages and or whatever the group stages are now, and get a couple of teams to the quarterfinals. But if you look at the strength of the domestic leagues and the strength of the domestic game, then it's hard to argue that the English teams deserve success, because the French teams are getting massive crowds. They're playing in an incredibly competitive league week in, week out, and they've got a national game and a domestic structure that is set up to help them succeed. Look at the English teams. They've got a pretty poor domestic game. They've got a national body who organise the game who are useless. And there's no sort of pooling of resources in the way that there is in, like, Ireland, where, you know, you've got a limited number of teams, you've got your best players turning out for the Champions Cup, and you're almost focusing your resources on the Champions Cup and the latter stages of your league because you can afford to. So I think it's, and even Ireland now, the only competitive team left in Ireland is Leinster. You know, Munster are nowhere near what they once were. Ulster, we've seen, are not at the races at the moment generally. And Connacht have never been really been up there. So, yeah, I think that means that the competition has an imbalance at the moment. In 10 years' time, it'll be different. In theory, if PRL get their act together and the RFU can all get sacked and replaced with a competent board, then this could be massively different. And England could have, you know, we've got the biggest player pool in the world in England. So we should be competitive in this competition. The fact that we're not is down to the administration of the game, I think, rather than a lack of talent or a lack of being able to pay them. Because, yes, we can't attract maybe the top level of international players in the way that the French can to sort of bolster our squads. But if you look at that Toulouse squad, how many of them are French? A massive majority that we played on Sunday, I think. If we had a squad of majority English players, we'd be able to operate under the salary cap, but we're not making the best use of our resources because the French player pool is smaller than ours. It's still massive, but it's smaller than ours. And it's not like a load of English lads at the moment are in France. I know there's going to be more in a couple of years. You know, Toulouse have got Jack Willis on a bit of a looking charm from Wasps, but he'll probably go back to Wasps in a couple of years. So, like, it's not like there's loads of English players going and playing in France. There's a couple. Their sort of international players come from elsewhere. So, I don't know. I think there's a lot. It just highlights what's wrong in the English game. And therefore, I agree with James that the solution isn't there for, oh, well, you can just have a bigger salary cap and then hopefully you'll be able to compete in Europe. It's kind of, you go away and make your domestic league strong, and you make your academy pathway stronger, and you make better use of that incredible player pool you've got, and you'll see results in this competition. So I almost sort of, I think the competition format is a nonsense, but I don't think the imbalance in it is necessarily unfair, because I think it's fully justified. But if you've got a better product and you can run the game in a way that says at the start of the season, show us you're financially viable and we don't care what you spend on players, then, you know, then that seems to me that you've earned that right to probably have all the semi-finalists in the competition, like they probably will have, because you've got the four best teams. This is sort of pivoted into a rant on the RFU, but that is sort of where all roads lead me on this conversation.
Yes. And I know we spoke about it a lot, last week. But I want to also go back to something we talked about last week, which is just how important it was to not only beat Ulster, but beat them in as resounding a fashion as we did, because it does mean as we start to pivot our conversation back towards the domestic league and the visit to Newcastle on this coming week. It just means we actually end up in a pretty decent position in Pool B in the Heineken Cup. Sale, despite that loss, are still fourth in the pool of 12 with 5 points out of the first two games by virtue of their points difference now being at 13 points. So it's getting pretty close. You know, you've got Sale, the Stormers, Munster, Ospreys, Clermont and Montpellier all on 5 points. And remember, it's the top eight teams that qualify. So whilst we are still in a good position, we're not in as good a position as we could have been. But that shows you just how important it is to prioritise your home games and prioritize your games against non-French teams. And it might be a case that we actually once again, you know, qualify for the knockout rounds, getting tonked twice by a much better Toulouse team because we have the ability to beat Ulster twice, home and away. So it'd be really interesting to see how that tournament progresses and whether or not teams like Sale can kind of qualify by prioritising those winnable games versus the ones that they can't win or are not set up to win. But just despite all the doom and gloom from yesterday, Sale are actually still in a pretty good position to qualify. What that tells you about the competition format, I don't know. I'll leave that to the listeners to decide. A couple of things on the agenda, actually, after the conversation about the Newcastle game this weekend. So I'm very keen to hand over to James. Just give us a quick rundown of what to expect from a Falcons team who've not been going very well this year.
They've had a very weird year. They're basically joint bottom of the Premiership. They've shown some flickers of life in the Premiership. You know, I mean, if you actually have a look at their results since the beginning of November, I mean, they lost at home against Bath. I mean, that was Bath turning the corner, right? I mean, they basically, Bath hadn't won a game for a year. I'm overdoing it. But, you know, losing at home to Bath, I think, showed where Newcastle were. But then the next week, they went away to Gloucester, who are fighting for a top four place and won away from home. I mean, there's some argument there in, you know, the sort of 4G pitches and being used to playing on those. You know, I think we struggle, for example, when we go away on 4G pitches, and it'll be no different at Newcastle. You know, then they went on and beat the Chiefs at home. So two in a row. That's Gloucester away, Chiefs at home to close out November. Not bad. But then they gone away and they got spanked, really, against Irish, who were sort of, Irish were kind of waiting for a good performance. They put in a lot of good performances and coming up just a bit short, and then just blew Newcastle off the park, 39-17. Then they've gone into the Challenge Cup, where Newcastle have made their decision to rest nearly all of their key players. They sent maybe sort of a first and a half, 1.5 team to Connacht and lost first game of the Challenge Cup. So on Saturday, they even at home, they put out basically a mostly second string side, and they lost quite heavily at home against Cardiff, 10-47. But it's going to be a very different proposition this week. They've targeted this game against Sale. They can see Sale get, you know, sort of turning up against Ulster and then to lose with the same side, you know, asking a lot of their players. And the Falcons are going to be putting out their first choice side against us. They would have had a 6-day turnaround, not a 5-day turnaround. And actually, the amount of players that have had to do that turnaround are relatively small, maybe four or five. Most of the players are coming in completely fresh, absolutely chomping at the bit to make an impression. I mean, when you have a quick look at their team, I mean, the things that jump out are, you know, their centre partnership, if fit, with Orlando and Moroni. You know, Moroni, an excellent signing, was absolutely brilliant for Leicester last year in their title-winning side. Those two have only played together in two games so far this year, and they won both of them. That was that Chiefs game and then that away game at Gloucester. So they've made a big difference, you know, international experience, know-how, both over 30. And then on the wings, I mean, I won't talk about them because I know that Lewis will want to, but Carreras and Radwan, you know, especially on 4G pitches, absolutely extraordinary attacking talent there. Where they're weak is kind of twofold. The front five isn't what it was. They've got a couple of heavy lumps in the second row. They're adequate on prop. They're weaker in hooker than they were. They've got Jamie Blamire now, but George McGuigan has just moved mid-season to Gloucester, which I think says everything about Newcastle's commercial position and ambition. You know, it's a club who are struggling. Again, not enough column inches about this. You know, Newcastle, same as us. Do the RFU, do Premiership Rugby, do they really give a shit about professional rugby in the North East, for example? We should talk about the women's decision after this before we head off. And then, you know, in the back row, there's no more Mark Wilson. Will Walsh, their captain's been struggling with injury. Sean Robinson's had a call-up to the England team and is a good quality six. But I'd say there's nothing up front to worry us, but at home they'll be competitive enough. And we've come up short before at Newcastle trying to run over them. So I'd say be wary there, but that is their weakness alongside the halfback. Schroeder's at Bath. You know, they haven't really ever sorted out the number 10 position for ages. Showman will kick his goals, but they're pretty weak at halfback, to be perfectly honest. So the key is really beat them up front, put pressure on the halfbacks, and the game's there for the winning if we can play for 80 minutes. If Newcastle can get parity, yeah, or close to parity, then the centres and wingers will have an impact on the game.
Yeah, I mean, Alex, I'm keen to get your thoughts on this because, you know, like myself and like James, you're very avowedly a Newcastle supporter, is probably the wrong word, but we all want to see them do well because they're the other team in Northern England who play professional rugby. But I don't know if you agree with me, but like this Newcastle team, there's just not a lot there, if I'm being completely honest. And you're seeing that in the performances this season. You're seeing that in the trajectory of this team. You can see, as I think James has very very astutely pointed out, in the commercial direction of the team and the level of player they're able to bring in. I mean, those Argentinian signings, you know, getting Carreras in, who's obviously sort of taken the Premiership by storm a little bit with a couple of very highlight-worthy tries, you know, Orlando and Moroni, etc. But outside of them, like, you go up and down the list, and outside of some you know, exciting young talent, there's really not a lot to scare Sale, is there? And you know, from your perspective, is this just a case of go up there, do the job, play to our strengths, and if we do that, we'll win by 20 points?
Yeah, honestly, it should be, but I don't think it is. This is 2 days before Christmas. This is Newcastle's at home in awful weather in the northeast, most likely. This is a load of lads who are going to be well up for this game against a load of lads who've been spanked in the south of France and flown back on Sunday night or Monday morning. This is going to be way tougher than it should be. Now, in a normal week, Premiership week to week, you know, we played on Saturday, we're playing on Saturday again, I'd say, yeah. You know, I think Newcastle, as you say, have struggled to... I think James is right, that 10 position has been a massive issue for ever. You know, they were getting Andy Goode in at one point to play a 10. You know, it's... And they've never had a decent 10, really. You know, they've tried a few things. They've tried Joel Hodgson, Brett Connan, and obviously they've brought Tim Sherman in from Bath. It's just never been the solution. And similarly at 9, I think they've had a few that have almost threatened to kind of be the answer. But again, they've struggled. Mickey Young was kind of his renaissance a couple of years ago was our downfall there, I remember once, and that was about as close as they've got. But, you know, those are key positions, and instead what they've done is they've relied on a forward pack who at times in the last 5 years have been absolutely excellent and one of the best packs in the league. James is right, they aren't that anymore. I think the loss of McGuigan is absolutely massive. He's so key to their game and the way he plays. His driving maul ability to pilot that maul, his line-out throwing. You know, we said, I think we might have said it when Lemayo got called up, that, you know, he was behind McGuigan at Falcons. He was obviously ahead of Langdon, I think it was for us. But he was behind McGuigan at Falcons, who was better than him. So that seems very sort of an area of weakness. But I do just worry that when we play Newcastle, we get dragged down into their kind of, not their level, but into a fight that we don't want to be in, and it's going to be that again. And I do think you're right that in any normal week, I'd say right, just do the job, get out, get in for Christmas. But this isn't a normal week, and it makes me worry about this game quite a lot because I think we've seen enough from Newcastle beating Gloucester away and Exeter at home. That we know that when they need to win and when their backs are against the wall, and their backs are against the wall now, they got absolutely pumped against Cardiff. You know, that's an embarrassing result for anyone because the Welsh regions are in worse state than the English league. They've got a point to prove in front of the home crowd. It's their Christmas game. I think mentality is going to be a massive factor here. And that's what it is fundamentally, because you're right, with a better team. And I think, you know, any Newcastle fan would admit that, given where their squad is at the moment. We, on paper, we are the better team. But this is a mentality challenge. And that's a great test for us, because we've got to get ourselves up and go again. And this is what really, really successful teams and really successful groups do. They, you know, if they lose 1 week, they get up, they go again, and they come back with a big statement. And what Salem historically done, you know, is there's seasons where we used to go up and down and up and down. We'd have a big loss. We'd have a big loss and we'd lose momentum. And I think it's happened to us a few times where, you know, all of a sudden heads go down and confidence goes and everything seems to start going against us and, you know, everything becomes more difficult. And then we build up winning streaks and it goes the other way. So, yeah, I think it's a massive challenge, this Newcastle game. And I think you would be right if it was any other week. But I just think time of year, you know, where Newcastle are, where we are, what's happened in the last, in this weekend, and the relative strengths of the teams that have been subject to effectively two the similar results, you know. I mean, Newcastle lost at home, which is poor, but the scorelines weren't that different. So, yeah, I do worry about this. Newcastle always make me nervous. I never enjoy playing Newcastle. And it's partly because, as you said, we want them to succeed massively. So it's never nice if you win anyway, because you think, well, this is a shame. Why can't we all just go and beat Quins every week, both of us? As I say, massive challenge. I think, you know, 4G as well. We can't even if Manu's okay after his having his head taken off last week, we can't bring him back. So, you know, if we, it's going to be a similar squad that goes out again, and that's the challenge, I think, and I'm sure this group will rise to it. I think from what we've seen of them, there's a sort of mental strength, and if they've got Rob, as long as we can get Rob Dupree on the pitch, I'll feel a lot more confident, because I think he's got the heart to do this and go again. When he chased down the, I think it might have been Toulouse's last try, he ran 90 metres to chase down whoever it was with the ball. It's just that kind of effort is exactly what we want. So we need more people like that. But yeah, I'm more worried for this game than I was for the Toulouse game, which is saying something, I think.
All right then. So let's just do some quick hits for predictions before we talk about the last item on the list. So James, away at Newcastle, as Alex said, 2 days before Christmas. How do you see this one going?
I want to be wrong, but I'm going Newcastle 22, Sale 19.
Okay, all right. Alex, what about yourself?
I also want to be wrong, but I'm going Newcastle 15, Sale 13.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, so I'm the dissenting voice here. I think it's going to be Sale 27, Newcastle 9. As much as I want to be wrong, this Newcastle team is so bad. Like, there's a few shining lights, don't get me wrong, but there's just not a lot. And if Sale can put out even a relatively middle strength team, I think they'll be able to do the business quite easily. The final thing on our list, and it's very prescient considering we've just been talking about a game between the two northern clubs in the English Premier League, is obviously the decision that was announced that the Sale Sharks women's application to be part of the revamped Premier 15s competition has been rejected. And James, I can see you stewing a little bit there in the corner. So I'm just going to give you the floor. What did you make of this decision?
I mean, I do have to hold myself back here, because I was aware that I ranted for about 45 minutes on the pod last week and was sort of in danger of becoming unprofessional. But this is just another example of the logical thinking of the RFU is fundamentally in question. Like their actual administration and decision making around the game is so clearly flawed. Like, what process has they gone through to end up as this as the end point? From every single angle that I can consider, this is clearly not the best decision for the game in England. Whether it's women's, men's, clubs, whatever. I can see that without Newcastle sponsorship, a team in the Northeast was going to struggle. Well, do you know what the answer to that is? Centralised funding. Like, when you're trying to grow the women's game, you cannot have no team in Yorkshire in the Northeast of England in the top league. I mean, this is just absolutely nuts. And then in the Northwest, you've actually got the sponsorship of Sale. I get that it's a tender process. Maybe they weren't happy with the team playing at Heywood Road, or maybe they were not giving the RFU enough money for the privilege of being in the competition like Ealing obviously have. But to get to the point where you're adding another London club is absolutely beyond me. I cannot understand what the people sitting at Twickenham are thinking right now. Sale Sharks women have just had the best start to their season out of the three seasons they've been in the competition. Yes, they're not going to be competing to win the competition anytime soon, but to build a professional team from scratch is going to take commitment, right? Now, maybe we haven't thrown enough money at it in our tender and pitch process. Maybe the RFU felt that we were trying to get one on the cheap or without enough thought in it to it or whatever. But what they've done, right, the unintended consequence of this is, oh, there's two positions left. You know what? They'll probably scrape in that one. There will be one in the north, so these people can just stop complaining and they can take it a bit more seriously in the future. No, no, no. What happens right now from today is professional players have to go out and play for a club they know or think might be closing, right? So immediately the opportunity for Sale Sharks women to perform at the highest level is gone, been taken away from them at the beginning of a season. Absolute disgrace, right? What about injuries and things like that? People getting worried about injuries. Why? Because they're worried about their future. This is their income as professional players. They don't have other jobs anymore. So you're not going to get these shells. So you're going to be this fear factor. It's an absolute disgrace. Secondly, what's going to happen is, whilst we now go through we'll probably go through an appeal process, then there'll be all you can get in the final two positions kind of thing. What happens? What happens to all of our best players? They're not going to stick around and wait for that. They have to make the right decision for them. All of our best players will go and play for the 10 clubs that have been selected. So this decision might have been trying to make a point of some sort. I have no idea. But if they thought, well, Sale will still get one of the final two positions and professional rugby in the Northwest will be there, so politically we're all right. Incorrect. They've put us back right to the starting position. They've killed 75% of the progress that we've made as a professional club in the Northwest by this decision. And if no one in that room thought about this, it's very worrying for what we're expecting the relaunch to be for Prem Rugby and the RFU, honestly. If you do not have a geographical element to your approach to this, right, the game ultimately is not going to work. It's not going to work. And sometimes you need a central fund. And that's what the French Rugby Union do for their third tier of professional rugby. You know, they're teams in Normandy and shit, yeah? Why? Because ultimately that's where the growth has to be, right? And league's in probably the weakest position it's been in my lifetime. So you've got the opportunity to encroach in the north if you really wanted to. Anyway, by the by, the point is the RFU just made the decision to kill professional women's rugby in the north, and I don't give a shit what the reason was. That is the consequence of the decision.
I think the point you made about the impact this will have on what the team looks like if it does survive, or maybe even when it survives, the fact that Sale will lose all of their best players because their players will rightly want the certainty and guarantee of a future in the game. I don't begrudge anyone in that team who wants to make the move to, you know, Quinns or Saracens or wherever they get an offer from, because why wouldn't you? If you know that there's a 50-50 chance you might not be able to come back to the team next year. It's I mean, like, I'm gobsmacked. Like, there's nothing I can say that I think encapsulates the situation better than what James has said. And I read the decision when it came out, and you know, the clear question that comes to mind is why. Like, what is the reasoning? Why have they decided to do it? And no matter which way you play it out in your head, it just doesn't make any sense. And I don't know, Alex, maybe you can help me make sense of it, but this decision to get rid of both DMP Sharks and Sale, you know, I don't know. Like, I genuinely don't know what on earth the reason could be for that. And I don't know whether or not you were as equally taken aback by the sheer negligence that we're seeing on display here by a governing body that is not doing its best to protect and grow the game in this country.
Well, I think, I can't really do this any better than James has done it, so let's clip that up and get that everywhere, because that's exactly all my sentiments. I know DMP, I don't think, reapplied for the Premier 15s because they can't fund it. They had to crowdfund this season. But that makes the decision in relation to Sale even more... it's just stupid. It is illogical and daft. And as James says, it's an absolute disgrace. It's... What the problem is that you've got, these are the same people who awarded Sale a contract 3 years ago and said, okay, we want you to have a professional team. You know, they got rid of Firwood Waterloo for Sale. It's, and then 3 years later, they've gone, right, okay, well, you, despite the fact that you've won three of your first four this season, you haven't done what we thought you would, or you haven't committed enough. We're 3 years into a project here. Who ever heard of a team winning a league 3 years after being formed? It's absolutely nonsensical. So to then just go, right, okay, well, that's it. That's that experiment over, done. I cannot understand it. I cannot understand who made that decision to award it 3 years ago and why they are not sat in the room going, is it not a bit premature to pull the plug on this 3 years later? It defies belief, and it is, as James says, it rightly raises a massive amount of concern that I think we already had, that the RFU are shambolic. And I think, honestly, if I was Sale, I'd be getting into that select committee who've been grilling the RFU over Worcester and Wasps and going, actually, there's more questions to be asked here, because they're running a women's game that is going to be in as much danger. Because again, they're just, right, come on, Ealing, come on in. Have you got, you know, what have you got? Oh, a bit of cash. Well, Sale had a bit of cash 3 years ago. So that clearly, in 3 years' time, are they going to pull the plug on Ealing? No, they're not, because Ealing around the corner from them. That's, fundamentally, that is the truth. And they can spin it any way they want, but this is, the RFU can't see past the end of their arses, and the end of their arses are in Twickenham. And that is the way the game is run in England. And I think that's the sad reality of it. And it's just, history repeats itself, doesn't it? You know, however many, 120 years ago, the RFU couldn't see past the end of their arses to let players in the north be paid to play because they were having to take time off work to play rugby. And players in the south were rich enough that they could play. And that was how rugby league was formed. And history is repeating itself again because the RFU cannot understand anywhere north of, well, can't understand anywhere north of Watford, but they certainly can't understand anywhere north of Birmingham. They can just about get their heads around Leicester and Northampton, and they can get their heads around Bath because, you know, they're an hour away if you jump on a quick train. But they cannot, it's just, honestly, it makes me so angry because I don't think that anyone in that organisation cares about rugby in England. I think they care about Twickenham, and that is not the way to run a national game. And it will never change, I'm afraid. And this is almost the frustration. We can rail against it and we can be angry about it, but there's not going to be change in that organisation because that is how they see themselves, and the same people are going to bring in the same people below them with the same ideas. And until something drastic happens. And you thought that maybe Worcester and Wasps would be drastic enough, but clearly it's not. What needs to happen is a London team needs to go under. And that might change their mind. Or, you know, Twickenham needs to go down to 20,000 people turning up, but that won't happen. So until something ridiculous happens, you know, this is... Honestly, if Sale went under, Sale Sharks, this is... If Sale Sharks men's team went under, I don't think the RFU would care that much. I think they'd go, oh, that's a shame, and move on. And they'd bring Ealing up in the men's league. And this women's decision is just an example of that. And I just think it's so, so sad for everyone involved with Sale Sharks women who've put an incredible amount of effort in the last 3 years that has generated a fantastic start to the season. We've had a massive amount of disruption in that squad with players getting essentially contracted by Wales, by other places, with, you know, and they're starting to build a really settled group of players who are playing for Sale Sharks women, who want to play in the north, who want to be in Manchester. There's a massive amount of opportunity in Manchester for people to come and live here and make a living. You know, you see what, obviously some of the team work for Sale, but some of the team are at uni doing, you know, at the University of Manchester, some of the team are doing jobs in Manchester. It was just in such a good place, and you felt like this is going places. And to have that decision made by people who clearly haven't, just don't care. And I think that's the saddest thing. It's just, it makes me as angry as it makes me sad. And I cannot understand it, but in a way, it's exactly what I expected of the RFU. You know, it's the exact opposite of what I expect from a capable, logical administrator, but it's a disgrace, and James is right. It's baffling and it's wrong.
Well, unfortunately, we have to leave the pod there for this week, and not a happy topic to end on, unfortunately, but it's a very personal one and a very important one. And we obviously wish everyone involved with Sale Sharks Women the best of luck, realistically, over the next few months in terms of hopefully getting a decision on the future of the club as soon as possible. And obviously for those who can't afford to wait that long, decision on where their future in the game lies. With that all said, thank you to everyone for listening this week. Apologies, it's not been a particularly upbeat podcast, but you know, that's the break sometimes, and there's a lot of ridiculous decisions that we need to rail against. Thank you to Alex and James for joining me. And I guess before we sign off, is there anything else from the two of you that you wanna mention?
In one bit of positive news, Sale FC won away at Leeds this weekend, so on top of that one. So, we might. This well done, that's a great win. But yeah, I think me and James just sat here fuming in our own rants. So we best go and have a cup of tea and calm down.
Absolutely. Well, we'll all calm down and we'll come back to you next week at some point over the Christmas break with the. The news, analysis and thoughts on hopefully another win for Sale this over Newcastle.
Just wanted to give you a quick update on the Meet the Academy night that we held last Wednesday at Hayward Road. We had Fergus Mulcrone there, who was the Academy manager, and he talked us through the journey from being a school rugby player to actually making the Sharks Academy, which was very interesting and very informative. We had Tristan Woodman, James Harper and Nye Thomas, who were an absolute credit to the club. Very entertaining, very, very amusing. Also like to confirm that we will be running a fun bus to Northampton in February. And finally, we have had confirmation from the club that we will be running Beat the Sharks next year. We are going to meet them in January to discuss the final details, but that's very exciting. Hopefully we'll get a lot of local rugby clubs involved, as well as supporters of Sale Sharks. More details will be on the website, so check that out. And finally, have a great Christmas. Let's hope we get a Sale win in Toulouse, And we can continue that with wins at the Falcons and at Leicester on the 30th of December. Membership of the Sail Shark Supporters Club is only £12 a year, an absolute bargain. You'll find details of how to join on the website, which is sailsupporters.co.uk. For that £12, you will get cheaper travel on the Fun Bus, free admission to events like Meet the New Players and Meet the Academy. It will also give you early notification of when the end of season annual dinner is, which is a great fun evening. But much, much more importantly than that, you will be helping the future stars of Sail Sharks. Last year, we donated £6,000 to the Academy. And with your help, this year, hopefully, we will donate an even bigger sum.